This is David Lichtenstein. I want to share with you, I read an article. There's so much stress out there that there's been an increase in anxiety order medication, mental health because of COVID. I mean, and in the Frumma community, schools, camps, businesses, shidduchim. What do you do if you're a 20-year-old, 22-year-old boy, there's nowhere to meet? Simchas, where are you making your simcha? Weddings. It's just all-encompassing. And the news, you open up a newspaper, it's Trump and COVID, viruses, restaurants closing, vacancy, unemployment, it's up, it's down, a lot of stress. And I want to save you the bother of having to go to a psychologist through some Divrei Torah. I think they're very powerful. The Torah, in many ways, but Behester, it's not Benigla, talks about a concept called negative energy. What is negative energy? You come home, you sit down by the dinner table, and one of the spouses is in a bad mood. They're angry, they're critical, and you're in a good mood. With the kids, 2 minutes after the complaining and the kvetching and the griping, suddenly all the energy leaves the room with a big sucking noise, and suddenly it's comatose, it's quiet. Umlal. It can happen at work, in yeshiva, business, shul. Negative energy sucks the can-do out of the air. I mean, it's really the underlying concept. The Chafetz Chaim writes about it in Agdama. You know, it says, Miho ish ha-chafetz chaim, oyev yamim lirois toiv. You want to have a good life. You want to have a good days. We're only here 70 years in Bigvurei Shmainim Shana. You want to have Ahavas Yomim, good days, love days, literary stuff. What should you do? Netzor l'shayin chameira. Don't talk bad. I ask you, what is this? There's mitzvahs that are matan tzcharim b'tzidam. They have a reason. If you don't talk lashon hara, you'll have good days. Like, is there a logic to it, or is it more like chai ratel? You know what chai ratel is? Chai ratel is this magical invention that, you know, you donate money to someplace, and you could, if you need to lose weight, you lose weight. If you need a shidduch, you have a shidduch. You need a shtela, a business, you need to gain weight, you gain weight. Is it something like, or is it something that's really like the mitzvahs, matan tzcharim b'tzidam, there's a svara to it? So if you look in the Hagdama from the Chafetz Chaim, if you look in the Gra and Mishlei, what does it mean? You wake up in the morning, or you sit down anytime you're in a good mood with somebody, and they start talking lashon hara. This guy, you thought you knew him, he's a ligna, a ganef, a shakrin. That person, did you hear the story? That after 10 minutes of bathing in all this lashon, in all this filth and negativity, you walk away. It's really hard to be in a good mood. It's hard to be positive. Like, you just took a shower and it wasn't in clean water. And it has an impact. So what does the Chafetz Chaim say? You know, he calls Lashon Hara, the Lashon HaZoyer HaKadosh, it's Mila Bisha and Ruach, that brings down, Issar brings down a Ruach Mesava, Ruach Mesava, like an unclean ear. It creates negative energy. You know, there's a fabulous Vart from the Baditcha Varav. 2 weeks ago in the Parsha, we had the Meraglim, and the Haftarah is about what Yeshua did. Yeshua, 39 years later, sends Meraglim to Eretz Yisrael, V'yishlach Yeshua Meraglim, Cheresh. So the Mefarshim doesn't know what does it mean, cheresh. They were deaf. So Targum says, beroz, they were quiet. They went very quietly. But the Baditchava says something fabulous. He says, Yeshua is afraid. The Meraglim are going. They're trying to conquer Eretz Yisrael. And they're going to hear, they're going to feel the energy of 39 years ago. You know what energy that was? Eretz Echelos Yeshver. Loinuchal, we can't. Can't do attitude. Anakim, we saw giants there. We looked like grasshoppers. We looked like tiny little creatures to them. That's how little we felt. We were really tiny, helpless, and insignificant. He said 39 years later, he was worried, Yeshua, they would feel the first Meraglim's negative energy. So he sent Meraglim Cheresh. like sort of deaf, uncaring people who were insensitive, not in tune, who knew, just kept their head down and plowed ahead. A regular person, he says, would feel that energy. It lasts for 39 years, negative energy. So if you take a cup of negative energy from your favorite news site, the New York Times, whatever it is, I don't want to speak Lashon Hara on any from news sites, but just bad article after bad article, and you pour it into your head in the morning, you think that afternoon, if it lasts for 39 years, you think it's going to be with you? And you know that negative energy can kill you? I'll just share with you a story. I said it once before. I don't know if it's apocryphal. But you know those great freight trains that bring product from one side of the United States to the other on the railways? It used to be America's competitive advantage, the greatest railway system in the world. So there's a guy, he lives in mid-America, someplace in Kansas. And his job is when the big trains come in, he cleans out a few cars, a whole bunch of people, you know, on this huge station. And it continues on to its next destination, could be 35 hours away in any place in the continental United States. There's a very negative guy there. He's the type of guy, whatever you say is negative. You say, Pac, can we go to a game? They're going to lose. And it's going to rain anyway. You may get hit by a ball. Do you know how expensive tickets are today? When I was young, tickets were for a nickel. Anything that could go wrong, this guy, Mr. Gloom and Doom. So a train comes in. His job is to clean out a large refrigerated car. It's a hot summer day. He's wearing shorts, short sleeves. He goes in. He's cleaning it out. And suddenly, to his horror, his worst nightmare comes true. He hears slide, a door sliding, 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 click. He had forgot to put a wood beam by the door, so the doors click shut, and there's no way to open it from the inside. And this huge train, it's miles long. He bangs, nobody hears him. He's in a refrigerated car. He's dressed in summer clothing. He's going to freeze to death. Right, 35 hours away is the next stop, Saskatchewan. He knows nobody could live in that weather for 35. He takes out a piece of paper. He writes down his last will and testament to his kids. You know, I always knew I would die. Boyfriend, Mishunah, life is bad. Don't trust. You know, whatever you could do to be safer. Like, he signs it. And on top, he writes his name. I died of hypo. When you find me, I died of hypothermic shock. Okay. 36 hours later, the train pulls into Saskatchewan. They're emptying the train. And they find his body with in a coma. He's in a coma, and they find the paper, hypothermic shock, he wrote. They rush him to the hospital. The doctor looks at it. He talks to the guy from the train thing. And the doctor turns around to his associates. I don't understand. He says here that he's in hypothermic shock, which is amazing, because the refrigeration in the car was off. It was empty. They had turned it off. It was room temperature. And he's in a coma. So the negative energy that we create, not only can it make your day miserable, it can actually kill you. And you know that the Torah is very in tune with this. We all understand when we see the mitzvahs in the Torah, sometimes we wonder. It says, Loi Sirtzach. Well, everybody, all the Umay Soilim have Loi Sirtzach. But Klal Yisrael looks at Loi Sirtzach differently, much higher. You embarrass somebody? Mitchila sumka v'charka chivra ki'ilu hargai. That's also Loi Sirtzach. The Torah steps up everything. Levels, levels, levels in fineness and edelkeit and in sensitivity. Loi signaiv, even gneivas das. Even to shine the apples when you put them out in front of your store. That's Loi signaiv. Up, 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 up. To hit somebody, makariyeyu. Shulchan Aruch says you pasal edus. It's batter even by the Umay Soilim. You know what Klal Yisrael says? If you tell somebody bad news, moitzi diba huksil, you ruined his day, he's in a happy mood. You punched him in the face, everybody knows us. You hit him in the face with something negative, it's huksil, that's a bad act. We take makir to a whole different level. The power of negative energy. The danger of negative energy. The negative power of negative energy. You know, the Beis Halevi writes, famous Beis Halevi, Kehishchus kol basar astarkai by Noach. Not only was mankind bad before the marbel, even the behemoths in the field, the animals were bad. Beis Halevi says, how did the animals become bad? And he says, when an owner of a pet comes home and he's angry, his dog knows that he's angry. He kicks the dog. And you know what happens? He becomes mean. Becomes a mean critter. And the animals in the field and his horse and his ox, they could feel that negative energy. The animals could feel. That's how powerful it is. So it lasts for 39 years and it can kill you. And even your animals feel it. And you know, maybe you think, I'm too big. It won't affect me. I learned in yeshiva. I'm in Kol. I'm successful. I'm above it. I'm going to read the paper. Listen to the news every morning. I heard once a vart from Rav Hutna. Fabulous vart. We say every day in davening, if you daven Sfarad, for Arva Lashem, at the end of time, you know how sweet it's going to be, Minchas Yud Yerushalayim? The Karbanis and the Beis HaMikdash will be so great. You know how great? They'll be great Kimei Olam. The Gemara Darshins, what does it mean Kimei Olam? Like the Karbanis of Moshe. That's how big they'll be. And even bigger, Kishanim Kadmei Niyes. What is the Gemara Darshin? Kishanim Kadmei Niyes, Kimei Hevel. The Karbanis will rise to the level of Hevel's Karban, greater than Moshe's. So the Medrash says, why greater than why is Hevel's greater than Moshe? Shalai haya avodah zarah ba'olam. Hevel's life, there was no avodah zarah. It started b'mei enosh. So Rav Hutna said, what did it matter to Moshe that there was avodah zarah ba'olam? Moshe was at the harei saladas. He was the Nevi Hashem, pe'al peh. So he said something really powerful. He said, if there's avodah zarah ba'olam, if there's kfir ba'olam, you could be b'chadrei chadarim. That energy is going to get to you, that negative energy. You know, if you're a frumma person, you're doing your ma'aseh mitzvahs, you're walking around, and you see a Yale graduate, I'll give him a mashal, at the Ivy League with their religion of anti-religion. And they look at you and they say with a little smirk, like, you really believe in that? Even no matter how big of a ma'amin, a tracel it creates, some type of an impact. He says, Moshe Nevi Hashem, pe'al peh, the fact that the energy of Avodah Zarah was in the world, his nevuah was not, his carbon, there was something missing from it. Hevel's carbon was the purest carbon. There was none of that negative energy. Hevel gave it fully, greater than Moshe. So you could be as big as Moshe and be impacted by negative energy. I would think that whoever was listening, I certainly can't imagine we have anybody as great as Moshe. That's the power of negative energy. Mitzad Tov, if we curate what comes into our mind and into our head, and we should curate it. You know, if you go to the market, and you imagine you want your wife sends you to buy some meat, and in one it says organic, corn fed. The other one says has testosterone in it. It has all kinds of steroids, and it has antibiotics, which a lot of meat has. Who's going to take that into the house? Meshuggah daf min zayin. But into our minds, we let anything in. Any type of junk, garbage, negative, depression, lashon hara, from the news, come right in. That's terrible. It's destructive. Is it better to drink a pail of sewage and then take antibiotics? Could it help? Maybe just not to drink the sewage in the first place. Mitzad ha-toiv, what is the power of positive energy? I heard a story with a doctor. He was in Sloan. An oncologist for children up to, I think, 17 or 18. And after every patient, he would turn around to his staff and give a little, like, summation. This is the medicine. And at the end, he would put the prognosis. He would say, child, he believes positive prognosis will make it. Chmona Litzvan won't make it. So this healthy, you know, the starker kid comes in, and he looks at him and everything, you know, believes. And after he finishes, the kid goes out, and he turns around to his admin, and he starts dictating. I put him on this and this amount of this. His charts are great. His pressures are great. He's reacting great. This kid is for sure making it. And the doctor didn't realize at the time that the next patient had walked into the room. He'd come in, like the nurse had shown him in, didn't realize he was in the middle of dictating. And this kid was a shvach, it's a brach, and it's a klap, the kid, with a very, unfortunately, bad chances. But this kid is sitting there, and he's an intelligent boy. He's a 14-year-old boy after his bar mitzvah. And he overhears the doctor saying, he's going to make it. He's stark. He's good. So this little weakling kid listens. The doctor examines this other kid, the new kid who came in, and he realizes this kid is Nebuch. It's very, very sad. So he has a lot of empathy, and he talks kindly to him and this and that. And the kid leaves. Fast forward 20 years. This doctor is by a chasana. And somebody comes over to him. He says, doctor, do you remember me? He says, no, I'm sorry, I have so many patients. He says, I was a patient of yours, and he tells him his name, and he looks at him. And the doctor's amazed. This was the kid we didn't think would make it. And the kid says, you know, I have to thank you, doctor. I was so scared when I was 14. I was sure I was going to die. I felt terrible. and I could see the terror in my mother's eyes when she spoke to me. She would never said anything, but I saw, and my father would be by davening, crying. I said, I knew it's the end. But when I walked into your office, and I wasn't so polite, I guess I was listening in, and I heard you saying, this kid is very strong, he's going to make it, his charts are great. Dad, yeah, I said, well, the doctor said, I'm going to make it. And I turned around, and you know what? From then on, I was good, and here I am today, 20 years later, I'm married, I have kids. And the doctor's looking at him and thinking, oy, you overheard the wrong report. You heard the report of the kid before you, and he believed it. And he's here today. So the positive energy gave him such a chiyus. And you know how long positive energy could last? I'll tell you, I saw a story in Sipurei Hasidim from Rav Zevin. He writes that in the Ir Kalish, there was a Machnas Oirach, a very Erlich Yid. He would, when somebody, a big person would come to the city, he would always try to find. So he said a Yid came, one of the great Hasidim, the Rebbe Rabbinim of Pshiska came. His name was Reb Zelig Shrinska. He was an old man. And he used to stay by this balabas. He would take care of him like a king. He used to daven these very long shmonesos, Reb Zelig Shrinska. It was Friday night, and he was davening. Everybody left shul already. And the balabas, like he was the end of a long week. He was starving. He tells his son, listen, I can't wait any longer. Could you stay with him? And when he's finished, walk him home, and we'll make kiddush. He'll make kiddush, and I'll stay up for him, but I need to get some food into my system. So his son said, yeah. So he davened for another hour. He finishes davening. And his son starts walking home with this elderly Reb Zelig, this Pshischa Chassid. It's a quarter of a mile home. Suddenly on the way, he stops by a corner and he says, ah, let's stop here for a minute. And he takes a deep breath in. Ah, ah. So he says, what is it? He says, ah, the scent of Gan Eden. Let's wait here another minute. He waits a few minutes inhaling with like a beatific look on his face. His face is shining. And then they continue home. And it was a pella, nobody knew why. So the balabas checked. He found the oldest person in the nursing home. And he told them, that corner, yeah. Do you know that 200 years ago, the great Magen Avraham lived in Kalish. And that was the corner in that house, that a tiny little humble house, he lived when he wrote the Pirush of the Magen Avraham. And this Reb Zelig, almost 200 years later, could feel that energy of the Magen Avraham. That's how long G'dayla Mida Taiva. So every day we have a decision. We could open up the news, watch the news, listen to the news, read it. And what are we doing? We're taking sinna, anger, politics, still politics. He's going to win. How could I be read more? And we're taking all this rage and we're starting our beautiful day by pouring it right onto our face. It's a punch in the face, but it's a spiritual punch. But the Torah knows the power of the spiritual punch in so many ways. V'daber davar on Shabbos. You could be resting. You're speaking about it. You brought the energy of business in. I could give you 100 examples in the Torah. Or we have a choice. You're not going to bring home the beef with the antibiotics and the steroids and the cortisol. I don't want that in my house. I don't want that in my system. We have a right to curate what comes into us, the door into our lives. So if we took the Chafetz Chaim's Hilchas Lashon Hara and we said, I'm just using it as a manual. I want to be an Ohev Chaim, Liris Tov. You know what? You will save yourself the stress, the depression, the anger, the fear. What is my future look like? Your children will feel better. You will light up your house because the koyach hatov of the davening you do, of the learning you do, of the mitzvahs, that'll be the only thing there. You will only have positive energy. I want to put in a self-serving advertisement. It's if you learn the daf, you're learning Masechtas Shabbos, right? The best sefer to come out on Hilchas Shabbos, I think, in a long time, and I say this with a lot of prejudice, I'm an Egeya B'davar, is the Mishnah Achrayna, two volumes on the Mishnah Brura Hilchas Shabbos, and it has all the new law. That was my goal, even though there's a lot of beer in there too. It's taken over 10 years to put together, to write, and to edit, and it has fantastic haskamas, including from the Rashi Bahag, Reb Chaim Kanievsky, who writes that he enjoyed it very much, right, and almost
You know, most of the Gedolim in Eretz Yisrael, many from America, very beautiful Askamas. So I know you can't go to a Sfarim store now, but if while you're learning Shabbos in the Daf, you want to also look up a halacha and see all the Chikavarid, all the Gishmaka, every debate is in there. And just like here on the program, I don't shut down arguments. I don't say, this is how we paskin. On the bottom, we'll bring, this is the reason to be Mekel, this is the reason to be Machmir. This is this one's Sfarah, that's that one's Sfarah. You know, let a lot of our listeners or readers, let them understand the sugya and understand its tzaddim, because your case may be unique. So if you send an email to info@headlines.com, we will fulfill this order by mail, even though if you can't go to a Sfarim store. And we're charging $20 for the set, which is two big volumes. So it's a very good pricing too. It's subsidized. That's a very self-serving advertisement. And I'm going to also add on something that I don't think you've ever seen before on a Sefer, that if you're not satisfied and you don't think it's the best Sefer Nochel Shabbos that you've ever seen, you send it back. It comes with a full money-back guarantee.
Let's go to our wonderful program.
Hi, everybody. My name is Shmuel Honigwax. I'm filling in. Just want to introduce with a point from the Parsha. It says in this week's Parsha that Bilam praised Kal Yisrael by saying that there are Hein Am Kolavi Yakum, the Chari is Nasa, Lo Yishka Vad Yoichal Terev, Adam Chalolam Yishta. Bilam praised Kal Yisrael that we wake up in the morning, right away we start doing mitzvahs, and when we go to sleep at night, we finish our day by doing mitzvahs. So I believe that the conversation today will be regarding the time in between, how we spend that time when we go out to work, and our oisik and parnasa, whether that is being done in the most kosher way possible. Today we will be discussing a new and exciting initiative in the world of Jewish finance and investment, which is a new halachic portfolio being offered by Magni Global, which allows investors to invest in stocks which are allowed halachically and avoid things which might have some questions halachically. We are privileged to have with us today Rabbi Yosef Kushner, who is heads up the business halacha division in the Beis Havad, and also is a mechaber of two Sfarim, Commerce and Shabbos and Commerce and Yisuri Anoa, among some other Sfarim which have come out and which will come out of Mirtz Hashem. And we're very happy to have you on, Rabbi Yosef.
Thank you, Rabbi Shmuel. Thank you for having me.
Anytime. Okay, so let's start off with the topic of Macholos Asuras. We know that a Yid is not allowed to do Schoira with Macholos Asuras, with Nevelos and Trefus, correct?
Correct. Anything that's forbidden minatayra to eat, you're not allowed to minatayra. You're not allowed to be buying and selling it. Almost all the Rishayim learned that minatayra, you're not allowed to be buying and selling it. Yes.
Right. So this is an interesting question. I was approached around a year ago by Dr. Abe Unger, who wanted to get this concept of halachic investing off the ground. He asked me to research all these topics and come out with halacha guidelines for him as far as what it's permissible to invest in, what is better to avoid. So I looked into it and I came up with a number of questions, which I spoke over with Rabbi Miller and with others, and I also spoke it over with Rabbi Yosef Kushner, who's with us, and I wanted to just run by some of the things we spoke about and get some more clarity, because I feel like I still don't have 100% clarity on a number of these topics. They're very, very complex, a lot of topics. So when it comes to investing in stocks, many people blindly go ahead and buy stocks, and they can buy an S&P 500 index or invest in mutual funds or buy individual stocks, and they don't necessarily give consideration to these issues. And as you were mentioning before, there's a question about, is it the right to buy and sell Macholos Asuras? So as I was researching these topics, I came across, and I was told about the fact that there are a number of companies on S&P 500 which seem to have a significant amount of business in Macholos Asuras, such as Hormel Foods, which buys meat from farms where animals are slaughtered. Some of the meat is pork, and others, and all the meat is not shechted properly, so we need Nevelos and Trefus. So Is there a hefter, Rabbi Yosef, to go ahead and buy stock in a company like Hormel and sell that stock? What would you say about that?
So there's two levels to this question. On a very basic level, if a person's going to go and buy, I'm not familiar with the name of the company you just said, but let's just take
Hormel,
a
Hormel, Hormel food,
Dyson, Cormel, Dyson chicken, whatever.
Oh,
it is,
yeah,
right?
Tyson, yeah,
yeah, yeah. Okay, and they Tyson chicken, and that's Mechalas Asuris Minatayra, and they're selling Basar and they're selling Nevelis, and it's also Minatayra for a year to do Schayer, to do business with those items. And he's going to go, and he's not buying those items. He's not buying those. He's not buying cases of chicken and selling it. He's just buying stock in the company. So many, many Paiskim feel that buying stock in the company is the same as if you were buying the items, which would most people would just from at the first look, that's what you would think is going on. The Menchus Yitzchak really comes out like that. Really concludes like that. And others like the Chalakas Yankiv and the Masham, they seem to them on that when a person buys stocks and shares in a company, Mashag says the same, then what you're really essentially doing is buying a small part of the company, whatever the company's assets are you're buying, and it would seem there would be a problem. There's a famous Reb Moshe, and this is in Ebenezer Simon Zion, and Reb Moshe seems to take an approach that when you buy stocks, what you're really doing is you're kind of hedging on the future profits of the company. And as long as you don't have any control, any say in the company, which means you're not buying a significant amount of share that would give you any clout with the company, he feels it seems from his true, but you're not actually owning the assets of the company, and therefore you would not be over on the Isser of Schreiber Benevels Atreifis, which would mean it's mutter. Okay? Now, I keep right. on saying it seems that Ramosha says this because Reb Moshe happens to be talking about a case about investing in a company that is run on Shabbos, and he wants to know, right. could a Yid put money in a company that's run by Goyim on Shabbos? So Reb Moshe
right.
really
yeah,
says
yeah,
is that the Yid has no
thing,
control.
Yeah.
What does it have to do? The Yid has no control. Reb Moshe
right.
really does not need to say that you don't own any assets, because even if you did own assets, it wouldn't be an issue. And Reb Moshe really does say that. At the end, he says, the kinirah is not a real kinyan, and you're being kind of the ravachim. And that sometimes I wonder if Reb Moshe is somewhat being stretched to mean that you don't actually own any assets. And mainly you're allowed to own chametz and you're allowed to own the bales trevis, because for the real core tshuva he didn't need that. But yeah, she yeah,
right.
this is what
being taken out of context.
It's taken somewhat
it's being
out of context.
Taken out of context.
And somewhat out of context, and this is what it's assumed Reb Moshe holds. And I have heard from Rabbi Feinstein that that is the position of Reb Moshe, that a person who owns shares in a company does not own the assets of the company. So basically, to answer your question, can you buy Dyson? It would be a machlekes. I would say most Paiskim can say you should not. But in America, I think this sack from Reb Moshe has become somewhat accepted, and it may be mutter. Okay? There is one caveat I want to add, and that is that there is a Daka Tshuva in Siman Kuf Yud Zayin, where he says very clearly that if you give money to someone, to a goy, stam, to invest, and he puts it in, he takes your money and he's kind of investing for you, and he puts it into Nevelis and Treifis, so that's not called that you're putting your money in Nevelis and Treifis. I'm going to explain. The Isser is, Blashna Rambam, Zinadri Mechavin, Mechavin Isura, which means you can't stelzich your business on Isser. We know that there's a hetin is damnu. If someone buys a cow and he finds out it's a trefa, he's allowed to sell it because it's nizdamnu. It just happened. Nizdamnu means it happened to come by him. He wasn't really focusing on the Isser. So it seems like what the Darka Tshuva is saying, and this is something I've heard from my father-in-law, Rav Shlomo Miller Shlita, that if you give your money to a money manager without explicitly instructing him, he's not a shliach, without explicitly instructing him to put this money in Dyson chicken, and he does it, he goes and does that, then there would be no isser, and it would seem to be no isser even if you don't go with Reb Moshe. So that's kind of the two ways to answer your question.
Now, with this, I was always wondering about whether this concept that you're saying about giving your money to a money manager, whether that would apply. What, I mean, in other words, I'll ask it as a question. Why doesn't that apply if you actually go ahead and invest in the company itself, since there is a CEO who can do whatever, who can operate within certain guidelines and choose to do one type of business or another type of business, you know, and there's a board of directors that can make these kind of decisions.
You're right. You're right. And you're, I mean, you would be right if I'm giving my money to, let's say, a hedge fund. And this hedge fund, what they do is they're kind of looking for opportunities. They don't, there's no core business to this hedge fund. They go in, their money goes in and goes out, and it's swinging around, and it's finding opportunities where they could buy low and sell a high. And they sometimes do bump into businesses that are mechalas asuris. You're right, you can give them the money. It's very similar to a money manager. But businesses that are kavua and they're 50 years, and this is what they do, and this is in their bylaws. Now, there's no bylaws to a business, but this is in their business model, their business plan.
Right.
This is what we do. We buy beef and we sell the best beef, and that's the name on the logo. It's very hard to start saying that you weren't mechavim lachlis, because that's really what you're doing, mechavim lisuris.
I hear. Okay, let's move on to the next topic that I ran across, which actually, to me, was, I thought it was perhaps even more concerning in a way than this topic, which would be bas v'chalav. So we know bas v'chalav is aser b'anoah. You're not allowed to have anoah midaraisa from bas v'chalav. And there are companies I came across on, you know, on the stock exchange, which seemed to do a significant amount of business with bas v'chalav. For example, I came across Campbell Soup, which has soups which have meat and seem to have butter as well. You have McDonald's Corporation, which sells cheeseburgers.
Right.
So what would you say about that? Well, what's your position on that?
So there's two things. First, I want to just comment on what you just said about bas v'chalav being suri hana, and then we're going to have to really discuss it, suri hana, because no matter what, you are right, there's going to be suri hana. But about bas v'chalav being suri hana, bas v'chalav to become suri hana l'chol hadeis has to be cooked basa and chalav together. Cooked means mevashel in a pot with water. Okay, now there is a shita to Rambam that the only way you could have bas v'chalav to become as v'hana is if the basa is kosher. If not, it's inis chal neser, which means an avela, non-kosher meat that's cooked with milk, does not become suri hana. That's shita to Rambam. And there are shita that if you, even no matter what, if you're going to grill, like what happens at McDonald's, if you're going to grill a cheeseburger, and it's going to be tigon or you're going to, whatever type of bishel you do, but it's not real bishel meaning in a pot with water, right? It's going to be afia, however you're going to do it, tzli, tigon, afia, all these things. So that's also a big machlokes. The Beis Aaron wants to be makel over there, and he brings others, and I'm machmer, but it's a big shaila if that's called bas v'chalav. So the bottom line is, to get real bas v'chalav, my shver always jokes that to get a real bas v'chalav, to have suri hana, you have to have like a heksher. There has to be like a bas v'chalav heksher. People think it's so easy to get real gezunta bas v'chalav doesn't come across every day. That's the truth. You walk into a guy's restaurant, you could very easily be mitzaref and say that to get bas v'chalav, you have to almost stack chumers to get bas v'chalav. So not all bas v'chalav is created equal. And
as far as I know, let's just clarify for our listeners. Don't go eat in the Kaddish restaurant, right?
No, right. But when you, it's just funny because whenever the kids are learning or anyone's learning and they say bas v'chalav, so right away it pops in a cheeseburger. But a cheeseburger to become isuri hana, bas v'chalav to become isuri hana, really you have to stack two chumers. You have to say, first of all, we don't go with the Rambam, which most people don't. That's true. And also you have to say that even if it's not official, it becomes as v'hana. So first of all, that's one way how it kind of diffuses the crisis, because a lot of the bas v'chalav is not, it could be our coolers, or maybe to get isur hana, you have to have chumrat, depending how you look at it. So lav dafka it's aser b'hana. But you are right. When you look at a Campbell soup, and I'm assuming that soup was cooked, and if they put butter in there and there's meat,
they steam it, I think.
So then you're losing a lot of my heter here, because now the only heter would be it's b'semich on the Rambam, and we don't really pass like that Rambam. So now you have a good question. What's going to be with Campbell soup? So you'll say, why don't we just do Simchat Arbaisha that you don't own it? Since you don't own it, that's fine. But not owning it is not enough, because you're not allowed to be nene. And the halachas of the Suri Hana, al kaponim, when it's really Suri Hana, so then there's halachas that kick in. There's one of the halachas that kick in is called Reitz B'Kiyuma, which is a halacha midrabanan. It's called Reitz B'Kiyuma, which means the rabbanan didn't want you to have anything to do with the Suri Hana. You can't be in a position where you financially benefit from Suri Hana, even if you don't own it, and even if you're not really buying and selling it. And the cases in Chazal, Reb Shmuel, you could, I'm assuming, elaborate on this, but there are many, many cases in Chazal where they say there's an itzah right to be kiyuma. And I'll just give one quick example. The Gemara says if a guy owes you money and he says, oh, I don't have any money, I'm going to go sell my Suri Hana, like my Avodah Zarah, and then I'm going to pay you, and you have nothing to do with the Avodah Zarah. He owes you money. It has nothing to do with Avodah Zarah. But still, the Gemara says that's called right to be kiyuma. Because now I want, Reitz B'Kiyuma means I want that the Avodah Zarah should exist, so the guy, the Gentile, can cash out, and then he could pay me.
Right.
So now one can make a very simple argument. Forget about if you own the Campbell's soup, which is what most places can say. Forget about it. If you don't own the Campbell's soup, which is what Rav Moshe says, right? The bottom line is you invested in that company, and you are financially benefiting from the existence of the soup. That's really, and that's, I'm assuming, the basis of your question. What in the world? How does a person invest in that? First of all, it's a very good question. It's a very good question. And I want to answer your question. Is Campbell's soup on the S&P 500?
Yes.
Okay,
it's
so I just want to add to all our listeners out there who are thinking to themselves, you know, it's really good I didn't invest in Campbell's soup, right? Because it's a Shaila, if you're allowed to invest in Campbell's soup. So I want to let the island know that if you recently invested in your Roth IRA and you took a blue chip, meaning a S&P index chip, which basically covered the entire S&P, right? And that means it's a composite. It's a composite of all 500 companies in the S&P. Or you went on to Vanguard and the Vanguard 500, which is a very common financial vehicle that people invest in. And that's also it's an index fund. And what it is it just mimics, and it's a composite of all the 500 companies in the S&P. If you did that, essentially, you invested in Campbell's soup. So you should not you should not breathe a sigh of relief because you invested in Campbell's soup. So that's a question, and it's a big problem. And if you want, I could speak about it, but I could let you speak about it. What do you feel about this?
You speak about it in the meantime.
I'll speak about it. So the main problem, the main challenge is Reitz B'Kiyuma. Okay. Now I'm going to. I don't want to get too technical and too deep.
Well, why do you say the main challenge is Reitz B'Kiyuma? Why wouldn't we have a real bona fide issue of being over? Is there the rights of being nana?
Okay, so I'm going to explain what I mean. You're only really being nana without Reitz B'Kiyuma. You're only really being nana if you have anything to do with the company, which means like this. If I open a store, okay, I open a store right next to a cloister, a base of Avodah Zarah, or I open a store next to a factory that produces Yayin Nesach, or even not Yayin Nesach, Stam Yayinam, but let's say wine is Asa B'Hana, which is what the Mechaber for sure holds. All wine is Asa B'Hana, but it's not kosher. And the Rama says maybe we make up his manenu, but let's say I'm a Sephardi, and I know that wine is Asa B'Hana. But there's this massive factory that has 10,000 workers, okay? And I drive a food truck, or I have a store that I open, and I come and I service these employees, okay? Now, am I right to be? Do you, Reb Shmuel Shlita, feel that I am being nene from Isser because only because of Avodah Zarah there am I able to come and use the traffic of the base of Avodah Zarah or the traffic of the base Yayin Nesach to sell to the workers? You think that's an issue?
Yeah, it sounds like a grumma. It sounds like a very far grumma.
So, Emela, what I would say is if I'm not investing in the company, what I'm really doing is I'm just hedging. I'm hedging on the future profit. I'm kind of betting. I'm betting someone else who's buying, who's selling me his shares and who will agree to, and someone else will agree to buy the shares later, right? So really what I'm doing is I'm not really invested in the company. My finances are aligned with the company. That's 100% true.
Right.
But if I open a store next to a base of Avodah Zarah, I'm kind of aligned as well. but there is no buying and selling. I'm not getting profits from them selling. It's kind of what we look at it is like there's a speculation of how much it's worth, and I'm joining the fray of this speculation, and I right. feel that the price will go up. I feel that the company is undervalued, so I'm buying someone else's share, right? And then right. and then I feel that someone else will buy my share, whatever it is. It's really what's happening is there's a whole little secondary little casino going on the outside of the base of Yisrael, or on right. the outside of this base Yisrael Hana. But the real Yisrael Hana, which is when a person sells Yisrael Hana and he gets the profit, that lechur you wouldn't have. But the question is, the bottom line is that if a person owes me money, he can't sell his Yisrael Hana to pay me. Somehow my finances are really tied into this company. And if they're tied into right. this company, so why don't you have a right to procurement? That's how I would look at it.
Right. I got it. Interesting. I mean, one could try to argue that buying stock, even if you take the position of Ramosha, that you're not the actual owner of the physical company, one right. can argue that you at least have, let's call it maybe a shibud on the company. Their property is meshubud to you. So I would wonder if that itself would create a scenario where you're actually running into a serious Yisrael Hana problem. I mean, and both are serious, but more.
It's a fair point, and I'm not really from the believers that how far of Moshe is being understood. You're right. So it's a fair point, but I would say that usually Yeshibud would be able to be satisfied without touching the Yisrael Hana. Meaning in the company, unless you really have a big stake. And once you have a big stake, then anyways, Rav Moshe would say you're out of business. So. Right. I would think that usually Yeshibud, depends how it would play out, but usually Yeshibud would probably be able to be satisfied, and you don't really have to come onto the actual inventory of the Yisrael Hana to get paid uh-huh. out, and there's enough assets there. So I want to just tell you something very quickly, without bogging down on this rates of humor, something very quickly, a thought, that maybe it would make this a little better. And if anyone, if it's a little too complicated, I apologize in advance, but it's a very important point. You know, we find in the Gemara and Daf Nun Tes, I asked this to many, many, many people about Reitz B'Kiyuma, and no one really gave me a straight answer until finally, I think I might have had a breakthrough. But the Gemara says that if someone's, a guy comes and he's menasech my wine, so the halacha is, not even though now the wine is Yain Nesech, still, I'm allowed to charge him because he was menasech the yayin kosher, right?
Right.
Now, you're familiar. This is a gemara in Daf Nun Tes and Avodah Zarah. This is a halachim shulchan aruch. Someone, if a guy is menasech my yayin kosher, I'm allowed to charge him, even though now it's yayin nesech. I'm not charging him for the yayin nesech. I'm charging him for the yayin kosher. But the Rishonim speak out that Avadi, he has to get the yayin nesech, and if you don't give him the yayin nesech, he doesn't have to pay you. That's how it works. That's how it works in the world of business, right? So now, if I don't give him the Yayin Nesech, could I take my money? No. So now it's a very simple question, right to the Kiyuma. I need that the Yayin Nesech exists. I need that the Avodah Zarah, same. I need that this Yayin Nesech, which is a shtick Iser Hano, I need it to exist to go to the person who is Mazik me, and then I'll take the money. Wow. So the answer is, the reason why he's paying me, the reason why he's paying me is because he's paying me because he was Mazik. But if we wouldn't have the Yayin Nesech, the money's not coming from the Yayin Nesech. Just without the Yayin Nesech, I would. But the money doesn't come from that. The money comes from the fact that he owes me money because he was masik me. So I think in a certain sense with these Yisrael Hana, I think that the real appreciation of the value, what I'm looking for is I'm looking for a capital appreciation based on future sales, based on speculation of how strong the company will be. And that's really where my money is coming from. Now, you have a good point, Rav Shmuel, but what would happen if we wiped out the inventory? It would be a catastrophic thing for the company. All the shares would crash. So I hear what you're saying, but I don't know if that's actually holding the value. That would just be almost like a new black eye on the company, and that would wipe out my value. But maybe the rates of accumulation you don't have. That's my
interesting. Interesting. So you're broadening. You're broadening this heter
I'm trying.
You're proving that the heter is a little bit more broad, right?
I'm trying to somehow, you know, when you learn Reitz B'Kiyuma, you try to somehow limit it because it can go forever. Someone once asked me that on Pesach, If the guy wouldn't have bread, the value of potatoes would go through the roof. So therefore, we can't eat potatoes because it's reitz b'kiyuma. Because I'm reitz b'kiyuma on bread that the guy should have bread. And
you gotta stock up before Pesach.
What?
You have to stock up before Pesach. Have enough food for the whole Pesach.
Ah, I have enough. Ah, very good. So that's the test. So I figured there must be a different test. But this was the question.
Yeah.
That the bread in the street by the goyim is keeping the value of our kosher Pesach food down. So it's right to the kiyum. So he's making a joke, but he's bringing out a point that at some point we have to limit right to the kiyum. Oh,
right.
It's going to get out of control.
Right.
So I think I might have just answered it. The answer is that the value of the potatoes is not because this is bread. But if there wouldn't be bread, it would go up. That's kind of what I'm saying.
I hear. Very nice. Wow. Okay. That's great. That is great. And just briefly, what would be your position on companies that do a significant amount of business with with wine or grape juice
with
or grape products?
So wine is really, it would be a little of a split. The Sfardim really don't have much to be Samech on, and I saw Chacham Avadia is very, very hard on Sfardim that have anything to do with buying and selling wine. And there are people who do it because the mini bars in hotels has become, interestingly enough, a Jewish-owned business. And Yidden, I know multiple Yidden that own. They kind of own. People don't realize that you walk into a Hilton and you open the fridge and there's a mini bar. That's a separate little store someone owns. And
I've heard about that. Yeah.
Now you're not doing that. And I've seen from Chacham Avadia, and the Mechaber really doesn't have a heter. That's really the truth. And it's Stam Yeinam, which means Stam Yeinam. Just to be clear, Stam Yeinam means wine that is not kosher. That's all. And so Stam Yeinam is Asa B'Hanoi. You can't buy and you can't sell it. You really shouldn't have anything to do with it. You can't buy presents for your non-Jewish business colleagues. You cannot buy the matanis is also, you're not allowed to. If you get a matana and you're a Sfardi, you got to pour it down the drain. Now, if you're Ashkenazic and you go with the minig of the Ramah, so the Ramah really says that b'makim hefsid it's mutter. So what that means is that if a guy owes, and this is what the examples the Ramah gives, if a guy owes you money, and he says, listen, I'm having a hard time paying you, but I have these expensive bottles of wine that are non-kosher. So the Ramah says you're allowed to take it. The Makim Hef said you can be meko because there's manenu, people don't do yayin nasa. But the Ramah fears eye, he says, the chachila person cannot be buying and selling stam yeinam. That's what he says. There is a shayla, what about if I receive a present, which means I'm in business, this business associate, it's kutmir a present. In other words, the holiday season, I send him a lot of business. So kutmir a present. So what does he do? He buys me a 300 bottle of worthless wine, meaning worthless because it's not kosher. So now, is that called a makim hefsid? I want to cash out my schus, right? So that's a shayla. I think there's a makim to say that's a valid point. I told this to my father-in-law. He was underwhelmed by calling a present. He was a little underwhelmed that you can call a present a makim hefsid, but that's it. It's only like Ashkenazim.
Meaning you're right. So you're comparing that concept of a present to actually going and investing in a company that does a lot of business with the Ayin Nesach?
No, I mean, to go l'chadchila into a business No, I'm not, because a present is something that you did business, and now something's owed to you, and it happened to be wine. You can't control that. So now, if you don't take this wine, you lost your present. To go to Chetchila and invest in a company that owns a significant amount of wine and doing business with wine, I think Ashkenazim and Sfardim Chetchila should not be doing such a thing. And since it is a Chetchila, I think we're back to the Shaila of Yisuri Hana. Let Rav Moshe... There might be ways to structure it based on A, how much a percentage of it is in wine. Maybe I would be able to get my money out without using the wine. And maybe right to the kuma, it's a muck and makel because, like I was telling you, what I'm doing is I'm hedging and I'm speculating on future profits. But I think like right Paiskim, don't go Rav Moshe, I think it's a bona fide problem.
Interesting. Okay,
that's
great.
What I would think. That's what I was.
Okay, thanks. Thanks,
I mean,
Rabiasa.
Great
that
for you.
Has been, yeah.
Great for you, but the guy has an investment in this company. It's not so great. But again, I want to remind people: don't pat yourself on the back if you don't think you own any shares in wine. Because if you own and S&P, you probably do. They're probably companies, and this is why it's a very, very complicated, very complicated subject. If I may, can I say a few words, and then maybe I'll ask you a few questions, of Shmuel.
Yeah, sure.
You know, I had the schutz for many, many years to know Reb Shmuel, who is a genuine Talmud Chacham. We learned together in yeshiva, and I still have a shaychus to Reb Shmuel. And Reb Shmuel, you called me about, I don't know how long ago, and you told me you want to work on this project because you thought it was a talus for the Rabbim, and I agreed it was a talus for the Rabbim. And I declined to join your initiative. And the reason why, and you probably have been wondering why did I decline, but the real, well, first, there is time constraints. It is time consuming. But one of the reasons I declined, and I'll tell you the truth, is because myself and you as well, when we are in the, we'll call it the business of disseminating halacha on complex issues, it's paramount that we can give it over in a clear way. Very, very important, because people are not learning the sukkah with us, and they just need to know an answer, and it has to be 100% clear what we're saying and the context of how we're saying it, so it shouldn't be taken out of context, right? And this is something that we're very, and I don't mean to plug my safer, but shamelessly, but, and that's something that it was very, 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 probably the hardest thing when writing Commerce and Shabbos and Commerce and Esri, I know, is to take complex things and give it over in a very, very clear way. And
right. There's
always a risk, there's always a danger that you're oversimplifying. And when I say oversimplifying, meaning you're diluting the halacha. In other words, there's a certain dilution for the clarity. It's coming out in an oversimplified way, and some of the halachas is not being given over because for the sake of clarity, if that makes
right.
any sense to you. And I kind of felt that this is it would be such a thing. I felt that the only way to get it clearly is to oversimplify, and it's so difficult. I think, like in what I do, I know what you do, we're kind of walking a tightrope. We want to be clear, but we can't oversimplify. It's a very, very difficult thing. You have to kind of be shackled both ways, how much information to give, but enough that he understands the context of what you're saying, so he doesn't spell through to a different thing. And when you give an answer, you have to give a basics of what you're saying and without oversimplifying. So with that said, I did see that you put out very basic guidelines.
Right.
And they are somewhat clear. There's no doubt about it. You did a good job with the clarity. But what I wanted to do is kind of go through it and understand what it is you're saying and where you got to that conclusion, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Is that okay? Okay. So the first thing you wrote, now I know that you are a Talmud of my share of Shlomo Miller, and and I usually when you write anything, I usually see the influence of my share, and much of what you wrote I do, and some of what you wrote I didn't. So that's going to really jump off the page. So the first thing you wrote is really something that which left my head scratching, which you said that if there's a company that is run by a Yid who's not conforming to Shabbos, unfortunately he's not yet Shomer Shabbos. So it says that he owns 51% of the company, then a Yid shouldn't invest. Now, we both know, my sphere is very strong position, and it's really coming from Moshe, that it's all, everything is about control, which means if a Yid controls the company, then the workers are working for a Yid. If a guy controls the company, he's running the company, then the workers are working for a guy. And usually, it's not based specifically on ownership. Now, ownership usually could be an indicator of control, but it's not ownership per se that decides if the workers are working for a Yid or a guy. It depends on who is in charge. Who's the boss? So where did this 51% come from? Reb Shmuel Shlita.
You're right. Yeah, Reb Yosef, you're right. Let me just give a brief introduction to how I got involved in this. I was mentioning before that I was approached by Dr. Unger to work on this project to come up with guidelines, and I did speak it over with your Shver, Rabbi Miller from Toronto, who's my Rebbe Taka, and he offered me a lot of clarity in this, which I probably went and then muddled up. You're right, you're 100% right. It would not be the 51% ownership. Rabbi Miller was very
was very clear on that point. It would not depend on who's the owner, but rather a company that's not allowed to be operated on Shabbos, which is being operated on Shabbos.
So you just assume, right. You know what I mean? When you wrote 51, you really just using it as a kind of a not exact indicator of control.
Right. Okay. Right. And in fact, Magna Global, I believe, screened out Facebook and another very large tech company, which is controlled by Jews, though it's not.
So, so the portfolio really is built on the right way, but just these guidelines were written like that. Okay, no problem.
Yeah, I don't know.
Thank you for clarifying.
They probably asked me that, and I clarified it to them. That's probably what happened at some point. Yeah.
Okay, fine. In number two that I got from this memo, you wrote that a person should avoid investing in companies that make firearms. Is that accurate?
Right.
Firearm makers. Now I am a
manufacturer and sell firearms.
I used to say I'm a proud fourth generation American, but now what's going on in the world? I rescinded my proudness. But regardless, I am a fourth generation American, and I know people. I know many people that have firearms. Firearms primarily is meant for people to defend themselves. We know that Mishnah Berurah in Kufrin Aleph, he discusses bringing in weapons to a shul, and he says it's not covered by smedrish, and weapons ultimately a bit smedrish and a bit knesset is myrach yamlef. But these are made to be mikatsiyama, so it's not covered. But I don't recall anyone saying you can't have firearms. So what? Tell me about this. Where did this come from?
Yeah, you're right about that. Also, I was very surprised. But this year, Rabbi Miller was very very clear on that point.
Yeah.
That
really,
yeah, he was very
emphatic.
Yeah, straight from his mouth to my ear, and then from my ear to this paper.
He feels that
companies which manufacture and sell firearms, he feels are not something a Jew should be investing in, because safe, there are going to be a lot of criminals who are going to be buying these firearms, and they could use them in ways which are very very much discouraged. So so I was also very shocked, because I'm a proud Second Amendment supporter. And I would like to own a firearm, but I don't want to discharge a hashom on one of my children on by mistake or anything like that, or have them discharge it on me. But I don't think what he means to say is that hashom, that we should have a position against companies that manufacture or sell firearms. Rather, that if we invest in them, we might be aiding and abetting these criminals.
Something comes from that. Our money kind of helped that.
Mm-hmm. Right,
still, and what about all the self-defense that comes from it? I hear.
Right.
Okay.
Right. I don't know.
That's interesting.
Yeah. You're right.
That's interesting. Okay.
I can't defend that 100%, but we're following his guidelines.
Yeah. Okay. Another thing that was interesting to me is one of the guidelines is that a yid should not be investing in recreational drugs that are mind altering, including marijuana. First of all, was there any
very disappointing to me? That was so disappointing to me, and there was huge amounts of pushback from any older rabbanim I spoke to. Yeah,
really, they were what they felt that should not be that shouldn't be written.
The rabbanim felt that they really didn't understand why we're so against marijuana. Like, what's so bad about marijuana?
My question was, and tobacco was left out. Now, tobacco really is a killer. It's really a killer. Now, marijuana is a different type of, it's a gateway drug, so it has its risks. It really does, and it's unfortunately causing a lot of chaos and a lot of havoc and a lot of damage in the community. So I kind of understand it, but I was just wondering, was it ever discussed to include not investing in tobacco companies?
So I don't remember 100%. I believe that I did run it by him because I remember that it was on my mind. I don't remember 100% talking to him about it, but I believe that I did. And I believe that he did not recommend excluding tobacco. Yeah, he declined it. But I just want to clarify. I'll use this as an opportunity to clarify what Rabbi Miller was most concerned about in all these guidelines. He was not so concerned about the halachic issues that we were discussing before, like schayra with veils of treifas and isurei hanah. He was more concerned
that Yidden should not be investing in companies which would bring about a Chilul Hashem. So it's possible that his view on marijuana was mitzad Chilul Hashem, that he felt
and
that
it could be firearms as well, because firearms is looked at as not in that
right,
favorable
possibly,
light.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Possibly.
Okay.
And I think firearms was more mitzad what we were speaking about before, but I believe the marijuana was more Chilul Hashem aspect.
Okay. And this brings me to the last one. There are much more, but I'm just going through the ones where it's kind of you're saying that a yid should absolutely stay away from this. There's other guidelines I'm not going to go through, but this one says that companies that are not invested, but they are somewhat intertwined with a philosophy that limits religious services and somehow promotes more of an atheist philosophy, and they have a certain antagonism to religious and to Yidden, a Yid should not be invested in. And I'm sitting and I'm reading this, and I'm waiting for an example, and then the sentence ends. So, Reb Shmuel, can you shed light on what you mean by these companies?
So, this is actually a sore topic, because while I am confident that Magni Global has pretty much followed our guidelines with regard to everything else herein, in the guidelines that we sent them, I am not sure that they are following this guideline, which Rabbi Miller felt pretty strongly about.
Well, it's not a clear thing. There's sort of in other words, it's not black and white, which companies you mean, or is it black and white? I'm asking.
Right. Well, what I recommended to them was that they use this more as a positive screen, in other words, to reward companies for being more supportive of Hashem and religion, religion in the public arena, religion in private, and
right.
being supportive of Klal Yisrael and Klal Yisrael's causes in general. And I don't know that they actually follow that, but I don't want to mention any names on the air, but I think we all know who is antagonistic and support antagonistic to religion, and is very promotes very much.
Can you just
the opposite of religion?
The industry, the sector, like what type?
We could be talking about. We could certainly be talking about.
Are we talking about media companies?
Yeah, we could be talking about media companies. That those are in the S&P 500.
We could
or I would say at any.
Publishers.
Book publishers, possibly. It's less less usual to have such an obvious slant in book publishers, but I would certainly say educational institutions, if applicable. I don't know that any of them are on the S&P 500. I don't think they are, but any educational institutions that promote atheism or kfir or these kind of things should certainly be avoided by Yidden from investing in.
And again, and this is really what this is because you're kind of aligning yourself with a company that's Michal Hashem Shemayim. That's really what it is.
Right, right. It's the opposite of Hashem. They're enemies of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we have to avoid that. Yeah.
Right. You know, I tell people all the time, they call with certain shilas, Avodah Zarah shilas. They're doing business with a church, whatever it may be. And there's a shila of Avodah Zarah, and many times, kifi the variables, the Ikra Din is a Makan Timekel. And I tell them that, that you should just know, if you go through the halachas, you start from Kuf Chav Gimel near a day, and you just go, it's about 20 sifim in Hilchos Avodah Zarah, you will see from the Gedali Paiskim and from the Paiskim and from the Chuvis and Reb Moshe, whatever you're going to see, they always say that even when they're Mekel, they always end up, not always, but many, many times, they say, Shem Hashem, Yichich Midavizeh, and they always say that a yid cannot have anything to do with Delech Hazachin. Meaning
right.
you can't be helping Avodah Zarah, even if Maker Adin, you can get out of Lifnei Iver and you can get out of Meseyeya. But self called self, you shouldn't have to do with this.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And that's really what this is. Yeah.
Right, right. To me this is like probably the most important thing, and you know, Yishar also took
really?
This very seriously,
this
idea, yeah. And unfortunately, Yid who's investing in the S&P 500 index is supporting companies which are very antagonistic to Klal Yisrael.
Yeah.
We have to really be cognizant of that.
Very interesting. Yeah, I think that people, I tell it to people, they're not cognizant of that. The people, they're not maliciously,
right.
They're just not cognizant of that. Okay, fine. Right. Very good, Shmuel.
Okay, thank you very much, Rabbi. beautiful double interview. Okay.
Fine, that's Lachar Abba.
We're going to be interviewing Dr. Abe Unger and Mr. Kurt Lieberman today. And this initiative was spearheaded by Dr. Abraham Unger, who's a musmach of Talston Kailo. And he's now a professor at Wagner College in Staten Island. He has a history as a researcher in economic development and municipal finance. I'm going to begin by asking Dr. Unger a few questions, then we're going to move on to Mr. Lieberman. So, Dr. Unger, what made you interested in this topic, in this area of kosher investing?
Two things specifically. One, just a story. Misa, years ago, when I was working at Lehman Brothers, one of my first jobs in finance, as a young researcher in equity research there, I remember a bunch of us who were observant would, you know, jump away from our desk for a quick mincha in another room, which the firm would give us, and then we would get back to work. But I realized over time there was a disconnect between, you know, our lives as from Yidden. We define ourselves by Shmiras and Mitzvos largely, you know, socially in terms of Shabbos and Kashrus. But when it came to our commercial endeavors, you know, maybe, you know, we know of a kula from Rav Moshe, and we know about Heteriska by a real estate transaction, but there wasn't a full-fledged, you know, project to really engage with Choshen Mishpat in the workplace in our commercial endeavors, let's say when doing stock analysis or building a stock portfolio, both in terms of concrete halacha and in terms of values. So I remembered that experience. Then, just a little over a year ago, just in the end of middle to end of 2019, turns out James Gorman, now this is years later, just 2019, James Gorman, CEO of Morgan Stanley, happened to like one of the books I've written on economic policy as a researcher. And so I had an in to Morgan Stanley. So I came in with ideas. I was given the red carpet, as it were, to present different pitches and ideas. And I came into Morgan Stanley, largest wealth management firm around. And I pitched the idea that we should build a portfolio, an index of stocks grounded in halacha, in Jewish law, for the Orthodox community, which is growing and Baruch Hashem doing well. And they weren't sure about the idea. They were already doing something in the progressive world regarding a tikkun olam kind of thing for the progressive Jewish community, but they liked it. They liked the theme of it, and they were kind enough to make introductions. And one or two degrees removed from introductions, formal written introductions and phone calls made by Morgan Stanley to help me raise seed capital to get this project going, I met Mr. Lieberman, who at the time, through Hashgacha Pratis, I'd like to think, was looking for, you know, a way to engage the Jewish community as well, and had been thinking about a Jewish portfolio as well, grounded firmly and concretely in Jewish law. And so we came together, and the whole initiative is about, much like the Beis Avad's work, you know, really engaging our awareness and deepened commitment, even more commitment in the Orthodox community to Choshen Mishpat and living it out fully. So there's no disconnect between going to Minyan in the morning and then running to the workplace. When you invest throughout the day, you're thinking halachically, doing halachic work, and living out halacha fully in your commercial lives as well, bringing our amunah and our Shmiras HaMitzvot to our investments and not having any disconnect there. But it was really through Morgan Stanley spearheading this and making those introductions that got me going.
Wow, amazing.
This reality. Yep.
Sounds interesting. Now I'd like to ask Mr. Lieberman, who's the CEO at Magna Global Asset Management. He's actually a leader in the idea of faith-based investment. And we're happy to have you on today. So, Mr. Lieberman, tell us a little bit about this portfolio. What does it mean exactly? What are these portfolios that a person can buy into?
Happy to do that, Rabbi Honigwax. Thank you for the opportunity to be on this podcast and reach out to the Orthodox community. The portfolios are a codification of halakhic law from an investing perspective. And that means that we worked with scholars, including Rabbi Honigwax, under the guidance of Rabbi Unger, Dr. Unger, to understand how halakha would impact investing. And this is new ground that I guess hadn't been broken before. So it was very exciting for me to see something new being created. We identified that which is prohibited or not should be avoided, and removed companies involved in those activities. The other aspect was to take the insights from the research on halakha, along with some elements of the Talmud, to say what should be rewarded, what should be enhanced. We at Magni already research companies for governance, and there's a lot of halakhic law that is about that which is good. And so we were able to take our existing research and extend it to cover what halakha said. And out of that, we then said the companies that better represent consistency with halakha should be rewarded. Rewarded means that when someone invests, they have a higher proportion of that company than they might in other portfolios. So you're going to avoid investing in that which is bad, and you're going to reward that which is good. And that's the basis for the halakha portfolio.
And what about the financial aspects of this? How does this work? Can you please explain to the listeners exactly what type of investment we're talking about, what type of account we're talking about, and where this is, what the platform is?
Sure. We use at Magna, we use Schwab, which is a major financial services company. They are the largest company in the U.S. for dealing with the situation. And specifically, the situation is a company like Magni wants to use someone large to handle the trading and all the operational complexity. Schwab does that for us. That allows us to manage the portfolio. So someone who wants to become a client opens an account at Schwab and signs an additional form that says Magni has the right to manage that account. And then people would put an investment in there and Magna would manage it. That product is designed for more affluent people. It requires at least $50,000. And I know that's out of the reach for many people. That's what we have today. We have a second option that's coming that I will get to in just a second that would be available for a much greater proportion of the Orthodox community. For the Schwab situation, it's what's called a separately managed account. That's a technical term from financial services. That means your money is there. You can see it. You could log on to Schwab and you can see your money. You can get Schwab reports. Your money never touches anyone else's money. It's separate. That's what the separately managed account means. That should provide you comfort and security. We're looking for the same capability, but for smaller investments, even perhaps investments under $1,000. That requires technology, and we're working with a software company in financial services. These companies are called FinTech, financial technology, that has the technology to allow smaller investments, again, as separately managed accounts, where Magna would manage the money using our halakha portfolio. So any investor would have a portfolio designed to meet halakhic law. And that we hope to have available soon, before the end of the summer is what we expect.
Right. Okay, so how's this, these separately managed accounts, how are they different than standard mutual funds? Can you describe to me, who is very ignorant of these matters, and to the rest of our listeners?
Sure. When the word fund is used, it means that multiple people's money are pooled together, and then there's a set of accounting to say, what proportion do you own? Effectively, what a fund is, think of it like a special type of company. There's actually an incorporation, and you own, as an investor, you own shares in that fund, just like you might own shares in a company. That to make those available to people, there are funds that can be purchased through stock exchanges. One is called a mutual fund, and the other is called ETF, exchange-traded funds. Think of it simply as mutual fund is an idea that was designed about a century ago before computers and is still a very viable way to invest. An ETF is a more modern computer-enabled way of doing something very similar. one of the advantages of separately managed accounts is the comfort you get that your money is not mingled with anyone else's money. It's your money. You can see it. You always know it's there. It's, if for some reason you decide this is not what you want to do, it's very easy to exit it. It's very easy to add money. With mutual funds, there can be restrictions on when you can add money, how much money you can add. There's a set of complexity. You will also know with a separately managed account how much you're paying for it. In a with us, there's a fee. It depends on how automated the process is, what our fee is. With a mutual fund or an ETF, there's something that's called embedded expense, which means they take out money and you can find out how much, but it's not, you have to go looking to find out how much they're charging you for managing that fund. And sometimes with mutual funds, that expense can be significant.
Mm-hmm. And do clients have, what kind of control do clients have about which specific companies their money is being invested in?
The, candidly, with funds, they have none, right? The
right.
fund does the decisions. We will, if it's the Schwab account, so it's $50,000 or more, there, it's something where we'll take and talk with clients and help them. If it's some in the future when the product for the smaller investments is available, there really won't. I don't want to mislead anyone. There really won't be. Think of this in just in simple complexity and economics terms. If someone's investing $1,000, it needs to be standardized. So what you'll be invested in is the Halakhic portfolio. Everything will be consistent with Halakha. That said, what you don't have control over it, other than you control whether you want to add money, take out money, or close the account. Those are all your decisions. You can do them at any time.
And how about the financial viability of such a portfolio? Have you tested it?
Yes. After the portfolio was created, we seeded it. In other words, I literally put some of my personal money. Magni manages an account with my personal money in it. I was excited about doing it. The performance of the portfolio roughly tracks the large companies. There's a index called the S&P 500 index. Many of you may have heard of it. It tracks the largest companies in the country. We have provided roughly the same performance as the S&P 500. Sorry for stumbling a little bit. In this industry, we're highly regulated, and we're not allowed to commit to future performance. Our design objective is to produce the same sort of results that are produced by the S&P 500, and you have the comfort and the security that it's a halakhic portfolio, so you are living your religion, you're living your faith.
Right. Right. Interesting. Wow. And Dr. Unger, what kind of oversight will you be providing to, you know, assure that this fund is compliant with the halakhic portfolio?
Just in terms of ongoing compliance and ongoing oversight regarding the halakhic compliance of the portfolio, we continue to consult regularly if and when a shaila arises about a particular company in the portfolio's compliance with the halakhic values based on the Beis Avad's research. We continue to consult with the Beis Avad. It's very much, think of the parallel like with the OU or any Hashgacha organization regarding food, right? The OU has its criteria, and if a company, you know, there's a question ever that rises up a company, the question is fielded to the OU Hashgacha team. Same thing here in terms of asking for ongoing guidance when and if the need arises regarding a particular company in the portfolio's compliance with the screens that are grounded in the initial research provided by the Beis Avad, for example, in its
right.
magnificent tshuva on the website and the research and principles grounded in Halakha by the Beis Avad. So really, it's a question of ongoing compliance and ongoing oversight. And when a shaila arises, we consult with the Beis Avad. And I want to just add in that this is unique in this country. In Eretz Yisrael, there are some, I think there are actually ETFs on the Tel Aviv Exchange that do have some oversight by rabbinic authorities, by Poskim there, but they really only deal with either Ribis or Shmiras Shabbos by the owners of the company, and they're on the Tel Aviv Exchange. This is the first halachic portfolio in the U.S. that, first of all, goes beyond Ribis and Jewish ownership of companies and Shabbos, which is actually still even has shaychus here in America. Those questions do have relevance here, but is more expansive in terms of all the values and other halachic considerations, and also allows an investor, and this is very important, who is concerned with halacha in their investments, to invest in U.S. public equities on the New York Stock Exchange. So it's a much bigger opportunity for investors just because of the nature of the portfolio itself in U.S., in the S&P 500, as it were. So it's both halachic and a tremendous opportunity to bring one's emunah into the U.S. marketplace.
Right. Wow. Amazing. Right. I understand, Kurt, that you've been involved in other faith-based portfolios in the past, and this is a new concept where I guess, you know, the other faith-based portfolios have been more developed, and it's more of a developed financial option for people. Whereas halacha portfolio, which is designed for Yidden, is not such a developed concept yet.
Very much so. Very much so. The Catholic faith and the Muslim faith, both have somewhat more developed finance. Islam's probably the most developed of them. The Catholic, it's interesting, in a certain area, certain way, this is ahead of where the Catholic faith is. The U.S. Council of Catholic Bishops listed 14 investment points that it wants used for Catholics who invest consistent with their faith. We're the only company that I believe conforms to all 14, and kind of similar to what Abe was talking about with the more limited application of Judaism and some other portfolios. Most of the other Catholic products really only touch minor parts of Catholic social teachings. And it's interesting, as I work with Sharia scholars in Islam, that as they become aware of what we're doing, they're very fascinated. And where it makes sense, we're going to see if we can, Abe and I can use some of the institution structures, process, and best practices that came out of Islamic finance and see where those make sense. We're not trying to apply Islam to this, but rather, since they have some history and they've done some things, if they've done something from a business perspective that works, we're going to try and replicate it so that we can speed the success of this, so that as many Orthodox Jews as possible can participate in this and are aware of it. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's an exciting element.
Very interesting. Okay. I want to thank both of you for being on today, and Amir Tashem will speak more about the halachic areas of this with myself and Rabbi Kushner.
It is
thank
a
you.
Great honor. Thank you.
Okay. Yes.